Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Nadya kadachit agatya. Nadya kadachit agatya. Nadya kadachit agatya. Tire nichipya purva vat. Tire nichi pangsi krishnam gayanto vijahru shalile muda of the river kadachit once agatya coming tire to the shore nichipya throwing down Purvavat, as previously. Vasangsi, their clothing. Krishnam, about Krishna. Gayantya, singing. Vijahru, they played. Salile, in the water. Muda, with pleasure. Translation by Prabhupada's disciples. One day they came to the riverbank and, putting aside their clothing as they had done before, happily played in the water while singing the glories of Krishna. Please repeat. One day they came to the riverbank and, putting aside their clothing as they had done before, happily played in the water while singing the glories of Krishna. So, in this section here, it's discussing the young unmarried gopis. You know, they're actually engaging in these pastimes of performing a brata for Katyayani. So Katyayani mentioned this verse. I don't know if this has been discussed before now, but the Katyayani mentioned this verse does not refer to Mahamaya. It actually refers to Yogamaya, because the gopis, they wouldn't be performing some ordinary, mundane brat. Whereas the Acharya's Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur particularly, he explains that here the brata they're offering, they're praying to Durga, but Durga in this instance means Yogamaya. And then the Acharyas point that out, and there's actually, I think there's a verse later on, I'm not sure if it's here or some other book I was reading in relation to this, but is it? Okay, but there's also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes from the Radha Pancharatra about this, and how the Radha Pancharatra indicates that Durga can refer to Yogamaya or Mahamaya. So in this case here, it's talking about Yogamaya. And also we see that this pastime, it's not all the gopis. In the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada says all the gopis. But then if we read the commentaries of the Acharyas, they point out that this means a particular group of gopis, which does not include the senior gopis. But on this day, because this, as it's saying here, this word kadachit, this refers to the last day, because it means once, but according to the Acharyas, this means the last day of their brata, which they perform for the whole month of Margashirsha. And then there is a verse here, Katyayani Mahi Mahayogini Dishwini Nandan Gopasutam Devi. I remember learning this verse one time, because it's praying, that they're asking Katyayani to bestow their blessings upon them so they can get Krishna as their husband. And I was thinking, oh, this is a very nice verse, I should learn this, so I can maybe one day in many lifetimes in the future achieve this position of being an intimate servant of Krishna. So then after I spent some time learning and I actually finally learned it and everything like that, then one learned devotee informed me, he says, oh no, you don't want to learn this verse. This is not a very good verse to learn because this is a particular group of devotees. And I don't remember exactly what he was saying. But anyhow, they're not the most intimate associates of Lord Krishna, because we see that Radharani and the other, you know, intimate gopis, because there's many different groups of gopis depending on, I don't know all the names of them, some of you probably do, but depending on what they were before they achieved this association with Krishna, then they're grouped accordingly. And even, you know, because there's the gopis that are direct associates of Krishna in the spiritual world, you know, such as we have Radharani and the eight principal gopis, Lalita, Vishakha, Indraleka, Rangadevi, Sudevi, Tungavidya, Champakalata, and Chitradevi. They're all like the eight, you know, the Astasakis. They're the eight intimate associates of the Lord. Then there's also other groups amongst those Sakis. And then in these Vrindavan pastimes, there's gopis who are the wives of the demigods. You know, in previous pastimes, they were seeing Krishna and they're saying, oh, you know, I perform his pastimes, I'd like to have that opportunity. So they've taken birth. And also because Krishna gave the instruction, you know, when Brahma and the demigods, they went down to the ocean of milk, when they saw how the earth was burdened down with all these, you know, kshatriyas, etc., they went down to the ocean of milk and they prayed, you know, my Lord, you please appear. So at that point, when Chiradakshaya Vishnu, he manifested and he said, okay, I will appear, but you should all appear before me. So we look at the Yaduvangsa. Yaduvangsa is all demigods and, you know, other associates of Krishna. They all appeared to assist Krishna in his pastimes. So the demigods appeared, but also the demigods' wives appeared. So some of the demigods' wives appeared as Sakis. Yeah? Then also we see that in Dandakaranya, there were various sages who were performing austerities. They were witnessing the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, and especially this pastime of, you know, when he was engaged in pastimes with his wife. And they think, oh, we would like to also have this opportunity. So they also appeared as gopis. Yeah? And you'll see there's many different personalities that appeared as gopis. So these gopis here are one of those particular groups. I do not know which one. But then we see that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he talks about that in his commentaries on this. If I can just find it very quickly for you. He discusses that briefly in his comments on the first verse here. He says, the distinction between these Kumari gopis performing a brata in the month of Margashirsha and those like Radha is made in the Harivamsa, Vishnu Purana and Brahma Purana in such verses as the following. And then he quotes a verse. So he's saying that there's actually a distinction between these gopis and you know, the more intimate associates of the Lord. But then by these performances of austerities, and because as we see, it's described here, they're only performing these austerities for the pleasure of Krishna. And then Srila Prabhupada explains in relation to this pastime in the Krishna book that normally one doesn't worship demigods. And then he goes on to mention that Narottam Das Thakur expressly forbids it, that we shouldn't engage in demigod worship because there's no purpose to it. But then Prabhupada, he goes on to mention that for the pleasure of Krishna, one may engage in these different types of things. Yet this is sometimes misunderstood. Devotees think, well, I'm doing this for the pleasure of Krishna. But we can't compare our standard of devotional service with the standard of devotional service of the residents of Vrindavan. Because their standard of devotional service is 24 hours a day. They are 100% engaged in the service of Lord Krishna. And Prabhupada comments that the Vrindavan mood, which is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, is that they cannot help but think about Krishna 24 hours a day. 24 hours a day, they're just completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. They wake up in the morning, they think about Krishna. They go throughout their activities of the day, they think about Krishna. They're doing all their activities during the day for the pleasure of Krishna. You know? And this is not just for the cowherd men, the cowherd ladies, and the children, etc., the gopis and the gopis. This also includes the cows, the birds, the bees, the trees, the creepers, every single living entity in Vrindavan. It's just completely engaged, completely immersed in constant thought of Krishna. This is one of their qualifications for becoming a resident of the Dham, is they're just fully absorbed. And we see this as a book by Krishnadas Kaviraj called the Govinda Lilamrita. And he's describing, in one section there, he's describing, I haven't read the full book, but I have read this section, where he's describing how when Krishna and Balaram are walking through the forest, how all the trees, you know, they're just like, it describes how they're bowing down and offering their fruits and their flowers to the lotus feet of Krishna. Even trees, you know, inanimate living entities like trees are so absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, they just bow down and they offer, you know, their fruits and etc. to Krishna. The birds, we were reading in the previous chapter, how the birds and the cows and the calves, whenever they hear Krishna's flute, they become completely stunned just by the sound of the flute, and they just become so absorbed, you know. And the cows, when they look upon Krishna, they look with motherly affection. It's described, this is a verse I was reading the other day, which is recorded in the Nectar of Devotion, how they have this motherly affection for Krishna, and they just want to give Krishna their breast milk, and they're praying like that. They want this opportunity to give Krishna their breast milk. So what happens is Krishna, he manifests this Brahma Vimohan Lila, or Krishna Shaktis, they manifest this Brahma Vimohan Lila simply so that the cows can give Krishna the opportunity to directly suck on their breasts. Yeah? So they manifest as calves. Krishna, he manifests as the calves, and then Krishna is directly doing that. So in the same way we see here, the Sakis, they're praying to Katyayani, that you please, you give me this opportunity to have the son of Nanda as my husband. So Krishna, he manifests that in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. He assumes the form of all the cowherd boys, and in that way they all get this desire fulfilled. And on this day, on this last day of the Brat, they're performing this Brat, then they've invited all the other gopis to come down with them. The gopis, you know, Radharani, etc., they have not performed this austerity, but all the other gopis, you know, the younger gopis, they have performed this austerity. But they all come down and they take their bath in the Jamuna. And then Krishna, he comes along, you know. He knows what's going on, you know. And it's quite an interesting, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has given quite an interesting conversation. He's recorded this conversation about, you know, what's actually happening there. And he's saying how, he's explaining how he appeared there. And he's saying, well, you know, I saw the saris hanging up in the tree from a distance, so I thought something was, you know, the Kadamba tree was putting on some special, you know, flowers or leaves today, so I wanted to come down and have a look. Yeah? And the guy's saying, oh, you're just making this up. They're our clothes up in there. You stole them. You put them up there. He says, no, they can't be your clothes. There must be some other women, you know. I mean, what are you doing here anyhow? You know, and this goes into this whole conversation. And then he says, oh, actually, it must have been the wives of the demigods. They were down here and they performed some puja and they put their clothes up in the tree. He's just making up all these stories just to agitate them. Yeah? Krishna's got this very interesting sense of humour. He likes to stir up the gopis, and the reason he's doing it, just like there's a very nice pastime when Krishna's living in Dwarka with Rukmini, you know, and he's just trying to tease Rukmini, because Krishna in Dwarka has two prominent queens, one Satyabhama and one Rukmini. So Satyabhama and Krishna have this very sort of feisty relationship, you know, and there's always constantly they're teasing and you know, the tempers are sometimes raising, and Krishna likes this. And it's interesting because in Gauralila, then Satyabhama manifested or appeared as Jagannanda Pandit, and there's a really interesting pastime with Lord Chaitanya and Jagannanda Pandit, where Jagannanda Pandit bought this oil for Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya, taking up this mood that was there in Krishna Lila, he said, you know, what kind of sannyasi do you think I am that I'm going to put on this oil and, you know, smell, you know, very nice smell and that? And what will people say about me? You know, and he's like, he's teasing Jagannanda Pandit like this. And Jagannanda Pandit got very upset with Lord Chaitanya, got very angry. And he took the oil and he went outside and said, who said I was offering it for you anyhow? He threw it on the ground, he smashed it on the ground, you know. So in the same way, Satyabhama and Krishna had this pastime. And so Krishna was trying to experience a similar kind of exchange with Rukmini. And he was saying to Rukmini that actually, you know, you're such a qualified girl, you come from a very qualified family, and I'm not very qualified, you know. I think you should leave me and go get another husband, you know. And actually, I think it was Satyabhama, her parents had arranged that she was going to marry Shishupal, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, I think it was Shishupal. Or was it Shishupal? I think it was Shishupal. was it Rukmini? Shishupal, yeah. And so Krishna was saying to Rukmini that, I think, you know, you had this opportunity, maybe you should go marry him. And he's just like teasing her like this, you know. And of course, Rukmini is just completely, you know, in love with Krishna. She has no other desire than to satisfy Krishna. So when she's hearing these words come from the Lord of her life, she just becomes like, you know, mortified. How could he even think such a thing? And she just, you know, starts to cry and faints on the ground and everything. And then Krishna's like, uh-oh, I've taken it a little bit too far, you know. But he's doing this just to tease her, just to have some relationship, because he likes to see these kind of emotions. And also he likes to fan the flames of attachment so that his devotees become more and more attached to him. So in the same way here, we see that Krishna, he has this joking spirit. Yeah? And he's just teasing the gopis. It's all he's doing. He's teasing. It's not like he's, you know, like an ordinary mundane person may come upon this situation and be very, very aroused by lusty desires. But Krishna is a transcendental Lord. He doesn't have lusty desires. There's no hint or trace of lust in him at all. It's actually simply a pastime that he's performing in order to increase the gopis' love for him. Because they're praying here. They're saying, you know, my dear Katyayani, you please make the son of Nanda, the Nanda Gopa Sutta Devi, you know, you make him my husband. You know, so he's appreciating this prayer and he's reciprocating with him and you know, fanning that spark of affection. And it describes also that I think in the next verse it describes it actually. Yeah, it says here in the next verse, there's one particular word there, which is vayasyai, as it means by young companions. So the acharyas, they described this, that when Krishna appeared there, he didn't appear with other cowherd boys. He appeared with young boys. And it's described in the very scriptures how they had, just like with, you know, any of the ladies who have babies, they know their legs are quite fatty. So it's describing their legs, and actually they're toddlers, they're crawling around. And it's described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that they were so young that they did not discriminate between male and female. They could not. They did not have that discrimination. And actually some of them were naked. They were just, you know, Krishna came down there with the young children just to, you know, have some play. And that when Krishna was laughing at this situation, they also laughed. You know? So it's interesting when you investigate a little bit about what's going on here, you get a much deeper and clearer understanding of the nature of these different pastimes. And so the gopis were here and they were playing in the water. But actually, as is the custom we see in India, and Prabhupada talks about this in the Krishna book, that in India we see the ladies, they'll go bathe in one place and the men will go bathe in another place. Just like, you know, in Vrindavan sometimes you go out to the kunds and you see all the ladies are down there in the bathing area. Yeah, and the men will be off somewhere else bathing. And, you know, it's actually like an unwritten law, so to speak. The men are forbidden to go into the place where the ladies bathe. And in the same way, you know, the ladies don't go to the place where the men bathe. And, you know, in Vedic society, this segregation between men and women is a very prominent thing. Because, you know, it's the whole Vedic culture, or one large aspect of the Vedic culture, is it's directed towards helping us to understand, you know, the unimportance of sex life. You know, it's helping us to minimize sex desire. And yet we see that in the Vedic society that there's many different guidelines given for how to minimize this sex desire. Just like there's a verse that's quoted in the ninth canto, it's from the Manusmriti, says Matra Svasu Dihitra Va Navaviktakshino Bhavet Malavanindriyai Granyo Vidvang Sangapikrashati. This is by, it explains that, you know, Matra Svasu Dihitra, so that's mother, sister, daughter. Navaviktakshino Bhavet, don't sit on the same seat with them. So basically what it's saying is never be alone with another woman, even your mother, your sister, or your daughter. Never be alone with them. Because it says, balavan indriyai gramya. The senses, so strong. Indriyai, senses, balavan, very strong. That even a person of intelligence can become bewildered. So the Vedic society, the Vedic culture very clearly points this out, that if one takes this risk, of a male takes this, and keeping in mind that when we say this, male can mean male or female. It's giving the guidance that if it says, you know, as Prabhupada says, for a man, the woman means woman, but for a woman, the woman means man, if you understand that logic. Yeah? So it applies to both sexes, that we don't take the risk of associating, you know, alone or in a solitary place with a member of the opposite sex, because as it says, the senses are so strong that even a person of discrimination will become bewildered. So the Vedic culture is so structured to help us to overcome this sex desire, because the sex desire is the very thing which keeps us here in this material world. It's the only thing that which keeps us here. There's nothing else. I mean, look at the material world. What is there in this material world that really is there that's worth giving up your possibility of returning to the spiritual realm? There's nothing. You know, not cars, not this, not that, whatever, you know. There's really nothing here. But sex desire is actually the shackle. As Prabhupada describes in the Gita, he uses this term, maitunya agara, which means the shackles of sex life. So the sex desire is the very thing which keeps us here, and it shackles us, it binds us up, you know, into this material world. And we see, it's very interesting to note that the Vedic culture, it's aimed at reducing the fever of material desire. For what purpose? So we can think of Krishna, so we can spend our time just meditating upon the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet we see in the material world, the business of the material world is simply to increase the fever. Huh? It's like, you know, we were discussing one verse yesterday from Manashiksha, a song by Narottam Das Thakur, glorifying the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. And he's talking about how in this material world, people are suffering from the blazing fire of material existence. Everyone's just burning up. They're on fire. And the interesting thing is, like, normally when someone is in a situation where they're burning up, where they're very hot, just like, you know, a few weeks ago it was very, very hot. You know, I think it was 45 plus, you know. So how many people turned the heater on? I don't think anyone turned the heater on that day. I mean, if you did, people would think you were crazy. You know? No, everyone was turning on the fans, turning on the coolers, you know, going down the beach, sitting in a pool, whatever, trying to find some way of cooling down. And if someone was acting to try to warm themselves up on that day, people would think there's something wrong with them. You know? Maybe they don't have a normal sense of perception to think that it's not hot, you know, in a day when it's 44 or 45 degrees. So in the same way we see in this material world, that people are suffering from the blazing fire of material existence, yet they're acting to increase the temperature. All their activities are simply aimed at increasing the temperature. You know, they indulge in sense gratification. So many varieties of sense gratification just increase the fever. What happens is they become more and more attached to performing sinful activities. Rupa Goswami explains this very nicely. I believe it's the second chapter of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He talks about how this cycle of sinful activities manifests. And he talks about this... I don't remember the term. I don't think, maybe it's kutam. I think maybe kutam. The sinful proclivity. You know, when one performs a sinful activity, and essentially when we're talking about sinful activities, we're talking about any activity which is separate from Krishna, any activity which is not directed at Krishna. Yeah? So by performing an activity, you know, papam, sin, which is not actually for the satisfaction of Krishna, it manifests itself in different ways. And one of the ways it manifests itself is it increases this desire to perform sinful activities. So this is how the fire is being increased, because they're acting in ways that are separate from Krishna. And then more and more people just want to enjoy themselves, their senses. They just want to enjoy separate from Krishna. Actually, they don't even want to enjoy separate from Krishna. They have no concept of Krishna. They have no concept of God. You know, just like there's a debate going on in politics right now about abortion. Yeah? And as it always is, it's a very, very heated discussion. And there's one group of people who are saying that, you know, keep God out of this discussion. I mean, this is how contaminated their conscience, how degraded their conscience has become, is they don't try to discuss things like in the Vedic society. They discuss everything in relation to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his empowered representatives, such as Vyasadeva and the Parashara, Rishi, and all these different personalities. But no, what they're saying now is, no, you keep God out of this. It's got nothing to do with him. Yeah? It's our bodies, we'll enjoy them the way we want to. But they don't even understand, where's the body come from? Yeah? It's come from Krishna. What's it? Isha vashamidam sarvam. What's that verse? Isha vashamidam sarvam. Yad kinchit jagatam jan. Tena chaktena bunjita magridha kashasuddhanam. You understand this concept, Prabhupada calls the concept of Ishavashism. We understand that everything belongs to Krishna. So when it gets down to, okay, this body, what am I going to do with this body? Who's the proprietor? It's Krishna's the proprietor. Narad Muni, he says the same thing. In the Narad Pancha, Sava Padi Vinil Muktam Tat Paratvinil Hrishikena, Hrishikesha. The senses, Krishna, he's the Hrishikesha, Hrishikesha. He's the proprietor of the senses. So if he's the proprietor, isn't it his business to decide how they're used? Yeah? It's just like, you may own a motor car and someone wants to borrow the motor car. You say, okay, you can borrow my motor car, but do not drive it over this speed. Do not do this, do not do that, you can do this, and please put petrol in the tank. Yeah? As anyone who's ever used any of the temple cars knows, practically every time you get in, the tank is empty. Yeah? So, we won't go down that discussion. But the thing is, it's like, if someone is the proprietor, they determine how that thing should be used. So Krishna, he's the proprietor. Aham Savasya Prabhava. He's the source of everything. Not just the planets. Not just the spiritual world. He says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything. And he says, Sarvam. Everything emanates from me. There's not one single thing in existence that doesn't emanate from Krishna. Everything comes from him. So with that understanding, who owns it? Krishna, he owns everything. It's all his. So therefore, it is his right to determine how it should be used. So when someone says, okay, let's have this discussion, but keep God out of the discussion, there's a fundamental misunderstanding there. They're thinking that I am the proprietor. Ishroham ahambogi. That I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer. And this is demoniac mentality. Demoniac mentality essentially means that one is thinking separate from Krishna. And this is the very thing that brings us into this material world, is we're thinking that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer, keep Krishna out of it. It's got nothing to do with him. But actually, it's got everything to do with him. And we see the residents of Vrindavan, they've understood that. They've understood that Krishna is the center of all existences. And this is why they're the residents of Vrindavan, because they actually understand their position, they understand the position of Krishna, even though they don't understand he's God, which is a very interesting thing. They have no idea that this is God. Because if they did, it would disrupt everything. How would they serve Krishna? How would the gopis be playing with, Krishna's up in the tree like this and he's stealing their clothes. How would they be playing with him like that? And he says to them, that they're complaining. He said, look, if you think, because he's saying, well, it's actually the demigod, why is the demigods, it's their clothes. I didn't put them up there. And he says, if you're saying I'm a thief, you're saying I'm a liar, go tell Kangsa, go tell the king of Mathura. Because he was also the king of that district. He's just like, such a rascal, he's teasing them so much. Yet still they had this mentality that actually, whatever he does, it's okay. They didn't mind. And even we see later that Krishna, he was saying, he told them to come out one at a time. He said, don't come out all together because you'll start to fight over whose clothes are what. But this wasn't really what he was thinking about. He said, you come out one at a time. And they come out one at a time. They're covering themselves up like this, trying to be very chaste like that. And then what does Krishna say? He says, oh, but now because you've bathed naked in the river, you've offended the demigods. So you must offer your pranams to the demigods. And so they're getting a little bit disturbed here. He says, no, but, they're trying to, bow their heads. He says, no. You offer your pranams by putting your hands above your head like this. So because they had this desire to satisfy Krishna, then they do it. And then Krishna's satisfied because he's seen their full surrender. Because it is natural that a young woman wants to protect her chastity. It's just a natural thing. Yet Krishna, in order to encourage them to surrender fully to him, he played this little leela with them. Yeah? Okay, so just read a little bit from the purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this incident occurred on the day the young gopis completed their vow, which was a full moon day. To celebrate the successful completion of their vow, the girls invited young Radharani, the daughter of Rishabhanu, and the special object of their affection, along with other important gopis, and brought them all to the river to bathe. Their playing in the water was meant to serve as the Avavrita Shnan, the ceremonial bath taken immediately upon the completion of a Vedic sacrifice. So we see here how Ridhana Maharaj is writing that they invited Radharani and the other gopis to take bath. And but as it goes on to explain, we'll read Prabhupada's purport. This is a comment from the Krishna book here. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. It is an old system among Indian girls and women that when they take bath in the river, they place their garments on the bank and dip into the water completely naked. The portion of the river where the girls and women take bath was strictly prohibited to any male, and this is still the system. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing the minds of the unmarried gopis, awarded them their desired objective. They had prayed for Krishna to become their husband, and Krishna wanted to fulfill their desires. Also now we see like this custom has sort of changed somewhat in India. You see now that a lot of times if you go down to the Ganga or something like that, you see the ladies, they're bathing fully clothed, possibly because it's a little bit more difficult to bathe fully naked, especially in a place like Navadvip where there's so many people and boats coming and going and stuff like that. But still, it is the tradition that men and women don't bathe together. Just like when you go to Mayapur to bathe, when you come out the gate and you go down towards Hula Ghat, and the end of the shops, you turn right there, there's a ghat down there. So generally, that's where the men bathe. And the women, they bathe up the other end of the shops. But it's not so strict these days. And also, I know in some places where I've gone, I was staying in a village in Durgapur, which is not far from the centre, Bardhaman. Actually, it wasn't Durgapur, it was... I can't remember the name of the place now. And it was near Durgapur. Durgapur is one of the big centres in Bengal. But there was like... They had time, so because the place where I was staying, there was only a small pukur, which is like a small lake or a large pond, if you like. And so... I wasn't aware of it at that time, but I found out later that there were certain times women would go down at one time, the men would go down at another time, you know, and it was very strictly followed. They wouldn't. I remember going down there because I used to go down there and have my bath every day, and I remember going down there one day a little bit later, and all the women were down there bathing. I was like, "Uh-oh, you know, I think I made a bit of a mistake here." But so generally they don't, you know, especially in the villages. Not so much in the big towns or the cities these days, but in the villages you'll see they still very strictly observe that. And a lot of times they don't really understand the purposes or the reasons behind these particular observances. But the Vedic culture, as we were saying before, the whole idea is to reduce the material desires. And the reason we reduce material desires is so we can use our intelligence and our time to engage in activities of Krishna consciousness, to think about Krishna. So the Vedic culture is just set up for that purpose. And you know, by following this culture carefully, then we will find that naturally and automatically the material desires will decrease, which will then give us the opportunity. It's not that automatically the desires to serve Krishna will increase. No, we have to work on that. But it will give us the opportunity to focus more upon Krishna. Okay, so we'll finish up there. Any questions at all? Gopal Guru.
How are you going to use from the day-to-day?
Yeah. So Yogamaya is Chit Shakti. There's a verse in the Brahma Samhita. What's that verse, Ripper? Chayevi Yashabu Vinani Vivati Dur. It's Shana the Rupa Vyashachi. To chase the Sani Sana, call him Damari Purusham Tamari. Huh? Yeah, what's the first line of the verse? That's what I'm trying to think of. Vibhakti Durga Ichchanda Rupa. Shisti, that's it, yeah, thank you. Shisti Stiti Pralaya Shadana Shakti Rekha. So it's describing how that Durga, she's of the nature of the shadow of the Chit potency. Yeah, so the Chit potency means Yoga Maya. Yeah? So Durga is just like the nature of her shadow. So, you know, just like, you know, you walk down the road, you cast a shadow. You can't separate the shadow from you. It's part of you. And she's, it says, Shristi Stiti Pralaya. So Shristi means create. Shristi Stiti, to maintain. Pralaya, to destroy. Yeah? So she's engaged in these activities of creating, maintaining, and destroying the material nature. Yeah? Whereas Yogamaya, she acts for Krishna's pastimes. Yeah? And yet, Prabhupada has also given the explanation that just like with an expert electrical engineer or a person who's expert with electricity, they can use the energy of electricity for heating or for cooling. So in the same way, these energies can act interchangeably with Yogamaya, that she can act as Yogamaya or she can act as Mahamaya. And then we see here that I think it's Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he talks about this a little bit in one of these purports. Yeah, I'm just looking for Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. He talks about this. In all mantras used to worship Krishna, the presiding deity is the spiritual Durga, yeah? Which is referring to. This is actually it's just before here. I won't read the whole thing because it's quite a long purport. He gives it. The internal potency of the Lord has a covering potency, was the Avarika Shakti known as Mahamaya. So it's saying here that the internal potency, Mahamaya, is manifested from the internal potency, right? And he's using this term Avarika Shakti, known as Mahamaya, who rules the material world. In fact, she bewilders the entire universe, and thus everyone within the universe falsely identifies himself with the material body. So this is one of the functions of Maya. She covers people. She has two primary Shaktis, the Avarantikama Shakti and the I can't pronounce it. I never have it. Yeah, anyhow, I've never been able to pronounce it. One is the covering Shakti, one is the throwing Shakti. She covers the living entities over, then casts them down the material world. And the name Durga is sometimes used to I read ahead there. Da-da-da. We can thus understand that the internal and external potencies of the Supreme Lord are personified as Yogamaya and Mahamaya, respectively. The name Durga is sometimes used to refer to the internal superior potency, as stated in the Pancharatra, and then he quotes from the Pancharatra. In all mantras used to worship Krishna, the presiding deity is the spiritual Durga, which refers to Yogamaya. Thus, in the transcendental sound vibrations glorifying and worshipping the Absolute Truth, Sri Krishna, the presiding deity of the particular mantra or hymn is called Durga. To confuse Yogamaya Durga with Mahamaya Durga is a mistake. Furthermore, although the pastimes of Braja are on the platform of pure transcendence, Shuddha Sattva, they somewhat resemble material pastimes in appearance. Therefore, there is no fault in the gopis' worship of Durga or Mahamaya. Independent thinkers who think that the name of Durga and Mahamaya refer exclusively to the external potency of the Lord have no chance of getting even a touch of the breeze carrying the scent of prema on their body. This is from Vaishnava Toshini. So he's saying here that even if they were worshipping Mahamaya, there's no fault. Yet earlier on he explains that actually they're worshipping Yogamaya. She's a manifestation of Chit Shakti. In one, because it's saying that, you know, in that verse it says Shristi Stiti, but that she's of the nature of the shadow of the Chit potency. So she's from what I understand. that she's manifested from Yoga Maya. So whether or not she's a jiva, I don't recall reading anything saying that, so I don't know.
When Lady Subhadra appears, or Krishna, she appears before Kamsa the Observer in Kamsa with the killer. But she also attains Yoga Maya, where Rasa was cast on. So is it the same personality?
The form that appeared to Kamsa was called Bhadrakali, or Yoga Maya. So the form of Subhadra Mayi, it's another form. Subhadra Devi did not appear to Kamsa. He didn't see Subhadra in this form here. He didn't see the sister of Krishna. It's another manifestation of Yoga Maya. It's the same personality ultimately, but it's another manifestation. Just like we see Krishna, he's manifested like this. Yet Balaram, Jagannath, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda are other manifestations. So in the same way as Krishna manifests in all these different manifestations, Srimati Radharani also manifests in all these different manifestations. No, we see with them, there's one thing called the Krishna Chetra showed me one time, which I use in a seminar, it's called the Sambandha Triangle. So at the top you've got Krishna, down here you've got the material energy, and here you've got the jiva. So the position of the jiva, how you relate to these two different things is how they affect you. If you think the material energy is for your enjoyment, then it binds you up in this material world. If you think the material energy is for Krishna's satisfaction, then it liberates you. So it all gets down to your consciousness. It's not actually Indra Dhruva Maharaj, he quotes this very nice story. I think it's quite a good illustrative story. How the disciple he's questioning the spiritual master about the potency of the material energy and why she won't let go. He's saying the material energy just grabs a hold of me, she won't let go. And then the guru says, he says, okay, you come back tomorrow. I want to show you something. So anyhow, he comes back tomorrow and the spiritual master, he's got his arms around this tree and he's holding onto the tree very tight and he says, tree, please let go, my dear tree, please let go of me. And he's just going on and on like this, And the disciple's just sitting there scratching his head. It's like, has my Guru Maharaj gone mad or something? And then he goes up and taps him on the shoulder. He says, Guruji, the tree is not holding you. You are holding the tree. And the Guru spins around and says, that's right, you rascal. And similarly, material energy is not holding you. You are holding the material energy. So the way we hold the material energy is by trying to enjoy the material energy. So as long as we have this consciousness of trying to be the enjoyer, then we are bound up. As simple as that. We're bound up in this concept of trying to be the enjoyer, trying to be the controller. As soon as we understand that the material energy is simply there to serve Krishna. Just like, we encourage people, you bring things and offer them to the deities. You bring flowers, you bring fruits, you bring milk, you bring anything and just give it to Krishna. Then the remnants you can take, not a problem. We're not saying don't eat. Just give it all to Krishna and starve. No, you bring it, you give it to Krishna, then you enjoy the remnants. This is how we enjoy, is through Krishna. Because he is the proprietor of the senses. We have no business to enjoy them separately from him. So by using these things for Krishna's satisfaction, then we achieve liberation. By using these things for our satisfaction, we achieve bondage. It's a simple thing. Krishna consciousness doesn't mean changing anything in your life except the way you think. That's all you have to do, is put Krishna in the center and then we become liberated. As soon as we put ourselves in the center, that is the source of our bondage. It's all, Prabhupada would say it's not an artificial imposition upon the mind. It's not artificial, it's the nature of the living entity to serve Krishna. It's the nature of the living entity to put Krishna in the center of our lives. But because we want to put ourselves in the center, then we become bewildered. Because it's a misunderstanding. It's a vidya, it's ignorance, to think that I am the enjoyer. So that's the function of the material energy. As long as you want to try to enjoy the material energy, she binds you up. She covers you over and binds you up, and you cannot get out. There's a verse in the Anadividya Yuktasha Purushashat Vedasu Srap Nabhava That's not the verse. It says, because the living entity has been, is anada vidya yuktasha, because the living entity has been, anadi, since time immemorial, has been covered by ignorance, he's not capable of affecting his own self-realization. Therefore, there has to be some other person who's in factual knowledge of the absolute truth and can impart this truth unto him. So, therefore, we have the instructions of the Acharyas. Therefore, we have the spiritual master to help us understand our position in this material world. And by following their instructions, we'll be able to free ourselves from this ignorance. And also in the... earlier on, the Bhagavad Gita talks about Parato Svatova Mitobi Padyatya Griha Pratanam Adanta Gobi Vishatam Tamishram Puna Punas Javita Javananam. It's saying that, you know, Matini Krishna Parato Svatova. They won't understand Krishna. No chance. People who think that sense gratification is the aim of life, they will never understand Krishna. Not by their own endeavors, by the endeavor of others, or by a combination of both. No possibility. Because why? Because they think to enjoy the senses is the goal of life. And as long as you think like that, you're going to be covered by the effect of the material nature. But as soon as we come to this consciousness that I am Krishna's servant, that's it. That's all we need to do is understand, I am Krishna's servant. I am his eternal part and parcel. I'm a part of Krishna. And what does the part do? Just like the finger, it's a part of the body. What does the finger do? It serves the body. As soon as the finger tries to act independently, it's useless, because how do you cut it off? It's independent. What does it do? It just withers up and dies. So in the same way for living entities, as long as they try to be separate from Krishna, they will just wallow in the material world. But as soon as they try to serve Krishna, then they become restored to the original pure identity.
Is there any connection with Yogamaya through the Paramparada? To be under that particular suffering?
You can only approach Krishna through the Paramparada. That is the only possibility. Krishna says that to Arjuna, and it's recorded in the Adi Purana. That he who thinks he's my servant, he is not my servant. But one who thinks he's the servant of my servant, he is my servant. Gopipata pada kamaloi dasa dasa anu dasa. That's our situation. So, I mean, you know, the process is we follow the process of devotional service. We chant our rounds, we follow the four regular principles, we serve the spiritual master, we serve the devotees. And in this way, you know, we become freed from the avidya, the ignorance, and actually start to understand, you know, our position, and start to understand Krishna and how to serve. Anything else?
Yes, Mahat- so Prabhupada said many times that material is for reformation.
Is for what?
Reformation.
Yes.
Reform.
Yeah.
The living entity. What you said is absolutely correct.
Yeah, we're here in this material world to reform our perverted desires to enjoy. Because they are perverted. The desire to enjoy is not a problem. This is actually the nature of the living entity. It says, Anandamoy Byasat. This is the statement of Vedanta Sutra. It's one of the very first verses, that this is the nature of the jiva, is to enjoy. But the problem is we don't know how to enjoy. We don't know what to enjoy. We think the body is for our enjoyment. It's just a lump of matter. That's all it is. Wait till you start getting sick, you know, and see the things that come out of it. You know? Then you start to get a little bit of a perception. Well, one thing I did some time ago is in Vrindavan, there was some one of the ladies there, a Russian lady, she'd left her body, and so we went down to the Jamuna with the procession to see the body burnt and stuff like that. And you get to see a little bit of, I won't describe it too much because it wasn't very tasty, but you get to see a little bit about what the body's made of. It's not very pleasant at all, and so we need to contemplate very carefully what the body is. And when you look at what it is, you know, it's just a lump of matter, inanimate object, you know, bile, mucus, air, pus, blood, you know, etc. You know, if you want to find out what the body is after, just ask Mahatmaji. He can tell you all the components of the body, much more so than I can. Yeah? And you can find out very carefully what it is. So, you know, get a bucket of all this stuff and try to enjoy it. Yeah? Get, you know, 90 kgs of blood, pus, stool, bile, mucus, air, see if you can enjoy it. But as soon as the jiva comes into contact with this, you know, gets encased in all this thing, we get bewildered for one thing. We think that, oh, I am the body. This is me. Aham mameti, this is I, yeah? That I am this body. And under the effect of this illusion, we think that I am going to enjoy this. But this is false. You can't enjoy that, you know. So we need to understand, you know, just by this the basic knowledge, the basic understanding of who I am. What is my position in this material world? That I am an eternal servant of Krishna. I am a jiva, a living entity. I am not this body. This is the beginning of being situated on the right path. So we see that, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't go straight into talking about Rasalila and Yoga Maya and all this type of stuff. No, what does he talk about? Very first instructions he gives to Arjuna, you're not the body. Very first instruction. This is the first thing we've got to come to understand before we can even bother with anything else. You know, about what is my relationship with Krishna, what is my Leela in the spiritual world, what is my Swarup. It's kind of all, you know, very academic and not very useful conversation, because the thing is, 99.9% of us still think we're the body, still think this is the way to satisfy is through the senses. We still think like that, you know. And how do you figure that out? Just look at what we do. When someone presents us an opportunity to enjoy, you know, when a man sees a pretty girl, what does he do? Most of us, we have a look. Some of us are Hare Krishna, you know. And the same thing for women, when they see a handsome man, you know, who, whatever for them is handsome, then, you know, they're attracted. So this is an indication, is we're not past the bodily concept of life. You know? Whereas someone who's past the bodily concept of life, when they look at an attractive person, someone who's like materially attractive to them, what do they see? They see a jiva to engage in Krishna's service. You know? With no falsity, with no, you know, like pretense. They just genuinely see that. You know? So when we can see like that, then we have some idea we're probably getting past the bodily concept. But as long as we have this bodily concept, then we're going to act in a way to try to satisfy the mind, the senses, the intelligence, the body, etc. Now, this is not our position. We need to understand that I am Krishna's servant, and the way to please Krishna is to serve him, and use all these things at our disposal to serve him. Anything else? A little bit louder, please, bro. I can't hear. So one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is that people do not understand what is religion and what is irreligion. So oftentimes we see, I'm not going to make any comment on which religions because I don't think that's relevant, but oftentimes we see that, you know, people think that a particular path that someone's following is religion. And there's so many groups like this. I remember there was one group some years ago in California, out in some desert, you know, they were worshipping this comet, that was flying, the Hale-Bopp comet or something it was called, you know, and they had this idea that the spaceship was going to come down, they're all going to get on the spaceship and go live in the comet. You know, that was their religion. And when they see something that is religion, they think it's irreligious. Just like, you know, what sort of comments do we get when we go out in the street and we chant Hare Krishna? Bunch of weirdos, get a haircut, get a job. You know, all these different types of things, you know, your cult is a cult, you're mindless fanatics.
That's because they think we're
irreligious. No, they think we're irreligious.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you'll see people like, you know, I've had so many experiences like this, you know, they're from a particular religious group, they're out on the street doing their proselytizing, they see us go past and they make so many derogatory comments. You know? So, you know, many people think we're irreligious. Or some people, as you're saying, they think, oh, this is another religion, just another religion. So people in this age don't understand what religion is. Yeah? So that is also another problem. Yeah? And but then what to do? It is our business to educate them.
Yeah,
motive, passion, ignorance. Yeah. They're just bewildered, basically. They don't actually understand what is religion and what is irreligion. This is a symptom of this age. There's many, you know, negative symptoms of this age. So therefore, people don't understand what is religion. It gives us a couple of duties. And the first duty that we have is, it says, first acha, then vicha, then pracha. So first we develop behavior. Yeah? Not that we just go out and behave like some lunatic and tell them all about Krishna, because then they get an idea, well, I don't want to become a Hare Krishna, I'd just be a lunatic. Now, first we have to develop saintly behavior. And then realization, knowledge, and then we tell people. It's important that devotees in the Krishna Consciousness Movement not only focus on spreading Krishna Consciousness, but also focus on themselves. Yeah? Just like Prabhupada, he said, I have one criticism of my disciples. They think the books are not for reading. They think the books are for selling. Only for selling, but they don't read themselves. Because if we read the books, we understand, you know, how we should behave. We understand, you know, we start to understand more about the knowledge. So we need to develop ourselves and become God conscious. And then, there's a Vedic aphorism that Prabhupada would quote sometime. Apani achari prabhu. I'm not sure if it's Vedic or it's Bengali. Apani achari prabhu jibera sikhaya. First your behavior become ideal, then you can preach. Yeah? And we see that when one has ideal behavior, that in itself is very powerful preaching. People will become inspired to say, oh, such a nice person, I want to be like that. So yeah, it's a result of ignorance. They just don't know what religion is, and it's our duty to inform them, to educate. But before we can educate, we have to have... There's a nice story that Prabhupada tells in this. I'll just finish up on this. That Prabhupada tells in this instance that one time there's a lady and her son used to eat too much sugar. And she was telling this her son, you shouldn't eat sugar, it's bad for you. Yeah? It causes so many problems. It causes your teeth to fall out. It causes problems in the stomach, etc., etc. So many problems come from eating sugar. And it wasn't just her opinion, it's actually a fact that so many problems come from eating sugar. And so she was just going out of her mind, trying to stop her son. And she said, okay, I know what I'll do. I'll go to Gandhiji and I'll ask Gandhiji to tell my son to stop eating sugar. So she went to Mahatma Gandhi and asked him, you tell him to stop eating sugar. He said, okay, you come back in 2 weeks' time, I will tell him. So then she goes away. She's a little bit puzzled. Why couldn't he say stop eating sugar? So she comes back in 2 weeks' time. And then Mahatma Gandhi, he looks at the child and says, stop eating sugar, it's bad for you. And the child goes, oh, yes, Gandhiji, I will follow your instruction. And she's puzzled. She said, Gandhiji, why couldn't you tell him that 2 weeks ago? And he said, because 2 weeks ago, I was also eating sugar. So it's just like, I've seen myself, you know, people have some attraction to Krishna consciousness. And then I remember this man I used to know years ago, he was smoking dope and drinking alcohol and smoking cigarettes, and he used to tell people about the four regulative principles. I mean, it's just hypocrisy. We're out there telling people, oh, you should behave like this and you should do this and that, you know, telling them Krishna consciousness. And the science of Krishna consciousness is the purest science. There's no science of religion greater than Krishna consciousness. Yet, how can we feel justified in telling people to follow this pure science if we ourselves do not follow? It's hypocrisy. So the first thing we need to do is ourselves, you know, take up that behavior. Then it has potency.
Like the doctor who smokes, he tells everybody not to smoke. So who is it?
Yeah. It's a fact, you know. My mother was like that. She would smoke and be drunk all the time and stuff like that. And she'd tell us, don't take drugs, they're very bad. Mm-hmm. And Mum, you know, you're stoned out of your brain on alcohol every night. Of course, we didn't say that because she's her mother, but you know, it's like in ourselves we're thinking, how can we respect that? Because you yourself are not following. So if you don't follow, then people won't respect what you say. But if you set the ideal example, then people will respect what you say. And in that way they become affected by your instructions or by your, you know, advice or whatever. Okay. Thank you so much. Granthraj, Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitya.